Good evening and welcome to Pello Talk. I'm your host, Dave Pello, and tonight we've got a very interesting program. There's a lot going on in the state of Victoria. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about some of the people involved in the topic of Sunday night's 60 Minutes story. And we're going to be talking about the right way to do politics. But first of all, it's worth mentioning the fact that we've currently had 6 months worth of really inept, really profoundly incompetent government using the provisions of the emergency laws in Victoria. We've had somebody who's produced the worst results out of all of Australia with the powers that have been given to him. And now Daniel Andrews is after twice as many again. He doesn't want to subject Victorians to just the 6 months which they've had to endure, producing the worst results and strictest lockdowns in the nation, including the rationing of food, including curfew on the entire population after 8 p.m. at night. It's like it's wartime, except there's nobody actually attacking the state. The Premier is doing it all by himself with his woke bureaucracy. Well, I caught up today with a great Member of Parliament in Victoria, and we had a little bit of a chat just not very long ago. So let's have a look at that conversation, and then we'll get right into it with our panel. Okay, well, joining me now is Brad Rosewell. He is the Member for Sandringham in Victoria and the Shadow Assistant Minister to the Leader of the Opposition. And we're going to have a little chat about Daniel Andrews' extraordinary grab for power in the Victorian Parliament. Brad, thank you so much for joining Pello Talk Live. It's a pleasure to have you on again.
Dave, always great to chat with you as well.
Now, I'm startled and dismayed that Daniel Andrews has so little confidence in the normal functionality of the Victorian Parliament and parliamentarians like yourself, democracy and the procedures set out by the Victorian and Commonwealth governments, that he believes they should have no role in deciding what the new normal is and what laws Victorians should live under. He wants these extraordinary powers, not for 6 months as defined in legislation, but a further 12 months, if not further beyond that, according to him, if there's no vaccination. Tell me, what is the Liberal Party's position on the use of these powers instead of referring decisions to Parliament? Is the Parliament unable to make decisions in less than 24 hours that are critical for the health of Victorians?
Well, Dave, you won't be surprised to hear me say that the Liberal Party position here in Victoria is that we will do everything we can to vigorously object and oppose Daniel Andrews' power grab. Dave, you are very lucky to be based in Queensland, mate, and we here in Victoria are under the rule of Daniel Andrews, and whatever he says goes at the moment, and that's what he's seeking an extension to as well with this extension of the state of emergency. But it goes further than that. The very understanding of freedom in this state is currently being undermined. Mm. The very understanding of what a democracy is and how a democracy should function is also being undermined and compromised in this state. I mean, it's very clear. If a leader, a parliamentary elected leader, such as Daniel Andrews, chooses to declare a state of emergency, there's a provision to do that, and for 6 months. If they want to extend it after that, they need to come to the Parliament. They need to come to the Parliament to justify why it needs to be extended. But instead, what Daniel Andrews is doing here in Victoria is seeking to use his numbers in the lower house and play some sort of horse trading game with upper house members on the upper house crossbench in Victoria to ram through a 12-month extension to his state of emergency powers. Now, under state of emergency powers here in Victoria, Dave, there is an immense amount of power invested in very, very few people. Immense power invested in Daniel Andrews, some of his COVID cabinet, this COVID cabinet cabal surrounding Andrews and supporting him and every move that he makes and every mistake that he makes as well, as well as a whole bunch of unelected bureaucrats. Now, what they want to do, Dave, is that they are very comfortable with this executive power reigning and ruling in Victoria.
without the very foundation of our democracy, the parliament, being included. They don't want scrutiny. They don't want interrogation. They just want the opportunity to rule as they see fit. Now, every one of those members of the Victorian Parliament, no matter who you, what party you're from or what your background is, you are there to represent a constituency. In my case, it's 46,000 people, just over 46,000 people, in fact. Now, they put me there for a reason. They put me there to represent them. And what Daniel Andrews is trying to do to me and to every one of my colleagues, no matter who they are or what party they represent, is to shut us up and to silence us. Dave, it is just absolutely extraordinary that an elected leader in this country would seek to silence not only Victorians, but also parliamentarians as well. But that's what we're under at the moment, mate.
It is extraordinary. And frankly, I've been outraged from the beginning. I've been quite concerned that oppositions of whatever party around the nation have been so acquiescent and compliant with the government, with these emergency cabinets and extraordinary powers for what amount to unelected bureaucrats. And in the case of Victoria, we see that the administration and the utility of these powers has been at best debatable, with lots of evidence and testimony given that science and biology and medical expertise have not been behind a lot of decisions. For example, the Victorian Chief Health Officer, under examination from an independent, admitted that there was, quote, some arbitrariness, end quote, in his decision to ban golf but not walking. Not science, but arbitrariness. And we've seen this around the nation. What galls is that these people who are not using actual science but politics, and then with the level of incompetence that we've seen on display in Victoria, where these powers have been given, we haven't seen effective government and effective management of the COVID crisis. And Daniel Andrews is asking Victorians and the Victorian Parliament to give him twice as much as he's already had, instead of half as much.
Dave, Andrews is guilty as charged and then some. I mean, it is because of his government and his administration's absolute incompetence that Victoria now finds itself in this second wave, under stage four lockdowns, the harshest in the country. Forget that, Dave, the harshest in our history. It's because of their stuff-ups of hotel quarantine, the fact that they wanted to go it alone. Now, every other premier in this country took on board the ADF's support to operate hotel quarantine. You know, through a national cabinet decision, decisions were made, state premiers went back to their communities and by and large agreed and implemented what national cabinet agreed to, except in Victoria. Andrews went it alone, time and time again. Now, we know because the Department of Health and Human Services' own health experts have given evidence to the COVID inquiry here in Victoria to say that 99% of the cases of coronavirus in Victoria at the moment have all stemmed through genomic sequencing to hotel quarantine. That means that the reason why Victoria is in a stage four lockdown with this second wave impacting us in such a tragic way, it's because of government maladministration. It's because of decisions that Daniel Andrews and his mates decided to go it alone.
And this is exactly what Parliament is for, to hold these kind of things to account. And yet Andrews has seen fit to suspend Parliament, to essentially make the people, the representatives that Victorians have elected, redundant and mere observers to the regime that's currently making terrible, terrible decisions, effectively banning debate altogether, as if there's only one expert who has any authority on the matters currently being considered. Meanwhile, we see people delaying their medical appointments for detection of cancer. We see people going and committing suicide and accessing mental health services in disproportionately excessive rates, far above what's normal People are being, lives are being lost to lockdown. And maybe, you know, an undetected cancer won't kill somebody this year, but how many lives will be lost in years to come directly because of lockdown, directly because of the fear? And I actually hold the media to blame as well. They have whipped up an extraordinary amount of irrational fear, and that is helping people to cooperate and acquiesce to the demands of a dictator for extended emergency powers. Tell me, I'm getting lots of people asking me, what can we do? They're just going out of their brain with the democracy dissolving before them. For Victorians, what can they practically do this week to help fight this regime of tyranny? We're in a democracy. Citizens don't have the right to bear arms, and we wouldn't want to encourage that until the very last extent. We're not there. But the warning is for a population to not be complacent while democracy is eroded. What can citizens do that's peaceful and democratic to hold the Andrews government to account?
Well, Dave, I think you raised a very important point, and I will answer your question directly, but you raised an important point as part of your preamble there, and it was around numbers. Now, this is something that really irks me, and something that I want just a minute to articulate to you and for your audience. Every single day, Dave, every single day, Daniel Andrews gets up in front of the media and he runs through a couple of numbers. He runs through how many new cases of coronavirus there are in Victoria. He runs through how many total numbers of coronavirus there are in Victoria. He runs through how many people have recovered in the last 24 hours of coronavirus here in Victoria. But he doesn't mention some of the most critical numbers that I think will shape, I know, will shape this state's future for the next 12, 18 months and much, much longer. Mm. Not once, Dave, does he mention how many suicides there have been in the last 24 hours, how many people have lost their jobs in the last 24 hours, how many businesses have closed in the last 24 hours and will never reopen again. He never talks about in the last 24 hours how much additional money the state of Victoria has borrowed to get ourselves out of a hole that is the making of Daniel Andrews and his mates.
Exactly right.
They don't talk about those things, Dave. They don't talk about those things. They're not interested in talking about those things.
And nor does the media. The media is towing the government line like they've been utterly prostituted for government control. It's appalling.
I'm not one to complain about the media. It is what it is. We know the operating environment we're working in. And if I can't convey a message that I want to convey with the media's support or otherwise, then I'm not doing my job correctly, mate. I'm not here to blame other people. I'm just here to tell you the facts as I see them. Now these are the facts that people do need to hear about, because arguably the deaths and the lives affected, you know, acutely by the health crisis that we're facing at the moment because of coronavirus will potentially pale into insignificance because of the suicides, the economic impact, the closure of businesses that will affect our community for a much, much longer time. Now, something that Labor don't have a plan for here in Victoria is a plan for economic recovery out of coronavirus. Now, wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? But no, what they're doing at the moment is that they're spending borrowed money because they've stuffed up and they've got no other reserves to draw upon, and they're in it to their eyeballs and they're not taking any responsibility. They want to shut you down. They want to shut me down. They want to shut the Victorian people down, and they want to rule by executive government. Well, we don't have anything to do with it. Now, you asked me a question about how people can get involved and what people should be doing. Dave, I think I've said to you before, and if I haven't said this to you before, I apologise. Politics is not a spectator sport. Politics is not about sitting on the sidelines and crowing and complaining from the outside. Politics is an active thing. It's a noun, not a verb. People need to roll their sleeves up. They need to pick up the phone. They need to contact their local Labor members of Parliament and certainly the upper house crossbench as well, and they need to convey to them directly what they think. There is a very active part for every Victorian to play, under this threat of an extended 12-month lockdown. And my encouragement to every one of my fellow Victorians is to roll your sleeves up, to either sign up to a political party and to get politically involved, or call call your local member of Parliament, Labor, Liberal, crossbench, and tell them what you think. Get involved.
the future is in our hands.
Yeah, well said. And I think you meant politics is a verb, not a noun. You said it. You might have said it the other way.
We're the Victorian schooling system, Dave. So
you're absolutely right. It needs. Your point is well taken. It needs action. It's an action word, and I'm not making. Look, I think we need to learn from history without wanting to readily compare any situation to the worst moments in history. But the worst moments in history happened with a permitting population that did sit on the sidelines, that did cluck their tongues in dismay perhaps, but did very little in fact. And so you're absolutely right. This requires action.
The etymology of the very word democracy means power to the people.
Mm.
This is the future of this state is in the hands of the Victorian people, Dave. Mm. So instead of sitting back at home and crowing about, you know, what could be happening or what should be happening or how things should be happening or could be, pick up the phone, get involved.
Yep.
I'm hearing from these people all the time. And I
they do feel very frustrated and very powerless. They really do wonder what difference they can make, and they, I guess, they compare themselves to those who are actually in Parliament and feel, well, if they can't do anything, how can I do anything? Is there an actual power to people calling their local members? What kind of heed will that get?
Well, Dave, we don't know if we don't try. We don't know if we don't try. And the cost of not trying is a lot, lot greater. Those numbers I was talking before about those people who are committing suicide, I spoke to a local parent who's a funeral director just last week. She told me in the last 2 weeks she's buried two 17-year-old girls in their final year of schooling. But in the weeks prior to that, she's buried two local small business owners. You know, these people feel helpless. They feel helpless. Those 17-year-old girls, Dave.
And you're right, these are not numbers that are making the daily briefing.
They were in the prime of their life with the world at their feet, and they felt like they could not continue. You know, every one of those numbers, Dave, every one of those people who feel like they can't go on, every one of those people who have lost their jobs or those business owners who will never reopen again, they're not faceless people, Dave, who we just talk about in terms of numbers. They are our fellow Victorians. They are our fellow Victorians. And so, you know, fair enough, okay, just continue to commentate from the sidelines, sit on the edge and complain all you like. But I tell you what, if you do, you're practically as complacent as the people making the decisions in this state.
Yeah.
So I'm serious, Dave. If people want to see a change in this state, they need to pick up the phone, they need to roll up their sleeves, and they need to get involved, and they need to do it now.
I think you're 100% right, and I fear the justification for anger is also 100% right, because if there is a powerlessness, it comes from being in the minority. It comes from the majority being silent, if not giving approval and assent to the current abuse and grab for power from the Premier, instead of power being in the House of the people, the Parliament. That's where it should be. And I fear that there are far too many people who don't watch this program, who just watch mainstream media, who have no information other than to go, oh, it's for our benefit, therefore whatever he says must be right. That is what cross-examination is for. That is what opposition is for. That is what two houses in the parliament are for. There are checks and there are balances for the health of democracy. And that is for the greater good, much more than any emergency power. Brad Rosewell, I thank you very much for your time, your thoughts, and your efforts to fight the erosion of democracy in the once great state of Victoria, and may it be great again.
I have every confidence that the great state of Victoria will be great again, Dave. But I also think that will only happen under a future Liberal government. There's an election in November 2022, and we need boots on the ground, mate, if we are to have an electoral change here in Victoria in that time.
Yes.
There's an opportunity to make our state great again, and we need people to roll up their sleeves and get stuck in.
Clearly. Your call is well heeded. May it be heeded better. Get involved. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Brad Rosem and Rosewell. I'm sorry, I've got some good friends who are Rosem, and I sometimes get them confused. Brad Rosewell, thank you very much. That's a great lot of passion that we love seeing there. Let's bring in our panel for tonight and have a chat about this extreme threat that we're under right now. And perhaps one of the biggest concerns that I'd like to chat with our panelists tonight is the fact that there's so many people who don't see it as an extreme threat to democracy. Joining me tonight is veteran journalist Corin Barraclough. Welcome to the show, Corin.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank
veteran
you.
Veteran journalist, you make me sound 110.
Well, you make us look very good, so we have to make sure every detail of your resume is out there. But also joining me is the veteran Christian lobbyist and former managing director of the Australian Christian Lobby, Lyle Shelton. Welcome, Lyle.
Thank you, Dave, and good evening, Corin.
Hi.
And we also have the lady of the hour and darling of the Australian newspaper, former vice president of the Federal Liberal Party, Karina Ocotel. You've got yourself on mute there, Karina. That's exactly the way the lefties like you.
Exactly. So, able to have a voice.
That's right. And your fellow co-belligerent in Victoria, Marijke Rancey, political posting mama, welcome to Pillow Talk Live.
Thank you. Great to be on with great people.
And my favourite economist in the nation, Steve Kyler. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, Dave, I just want to say Marijke.
You got it, 3-2-1.
That's what you have to do when you want to say it right. So good. Lyle, we had a question for you earlier on, and we might as well start there as anywhere, and that's what's your take, advice, or your, let's say, your personal interpretation of what the Bible permits and doesn't permit in the way of protest against a government that's overstepped its bounds?
Yeah, that's a big question. You could probably say there's a couple of interpretations in the Bible. I mean, it does tell us to live peaceably, to obey the authorities, to be good citizens. But I also think the Bible does allow us, where law infringes on God's law, it's no law. So if a law says that, you know, I mean, probably the most obvious example in today's world is the law allowing the killing of unborn babies. Yeah. Now, that to me is no law, and that's a law that I think should be protested. And I think there's even a place for, you know, peaceful civil disobedience. I'm going to say it. Martin Luther King Jr., the great civil rights leader, he engaged in civil disobedience for human rights for black people. No one says that what he did was wrong. So when they sat on the Selma Bridge and wouldn't move, that was civil disobedience. I think there's a place for that sort of protest. I don't like the sort of protest we're seeing at the moment by the so-called Black Lives Matters people who, you know, turn over cars and set them on fire and, you know, rioting in the streets. I don't think we need that sort of thing. But I do think there is a place for peaceful civil disobedience in the tradition of Martin Luther King and Gandhi.
Yep. I think you're exactly right. Look, it's a huge topic, and we won't get into it tonight because we could easily take up half an hour with it. But there's a valid question from one of the viewers, and we like to include them in the conversation we can. That's a great opportunity to suggest. Thank you to watching those people who are joining us live. And please leave a comment. We'd love to hear what you're thinking. We'd like to put it on the screen if it's civil, sincere, and on topic. And if it's a great question and can help the conversation go in a useful direction, we might even talk to it straight away. Marijke, give us an insight into the mind of a Victorian. The Victorians you know and are talking to right now, they're going through some pretty tough times with some extremely restrictive and oppressive rules coming down from the Victorian government. And now they're looking down the barrel of double the time served yet again. And one would have to suggest there's no reason to think the outcome will be different this time. How is that making the Victorians you're talking to feel?
Okay, well, there's always a mixed bag, isn't there? You've got your, as I mentioned, I think last time I was on, there was the Daniel Andrews sycophants and the fans, and they're still continuing on, lock us up, lock us up. But I'm excited to see a little bit of a change in the air because actually I think people are genuinely starting to wake up to just, you know, what a dictator we have at the helm. And you know, this latest power grab that Brad spoke to so well, I just loved his passion because it's been a passion of mine for the last few years. Mm. We actually have to start making a noise because This is actually quite frightening what's going on, you know. We are locked in our homes and we have lost our freedoms. And while I think many people were thinking, look, if we just obey and we just do the right thing and we're all in this together, they really believe the narrative, then, you know, the sooner this is all over, and they're the people that were screaming, you know, stay in your houses, wear your mask. Well, those people have certainly piped down because I think they're starting to realise that this is actually much, much bigger. This is a massive power play and quite frightening. The fact that he would attempt to use the, you know, the state emergency law was actually in place from the bushfires. Many people may not realise that. And then he just rolled it on with the virus and then to attempt to roll it on for another 12 months. I mean, I said a year ago, you watch, this guy's going to try and stop elections. I mean, that's how, you know, communist I see him in how he has run our state. And, you know, people laughed at me and thought I was, yet again, you're being hyperbolic, it's dramatic, that's not going to happen. Well, you know, if this power grab, if this actually goes through, he can potentially continue to roll this on and it would be legislated for 18 months to have this kind of power in place. So I'm 100% with Brad. We have to make a massive, massive noise. And I normally am not one to, like, I've copped a lot of flack because I haven't gone out on the streets to protest merely because, one, I don't think it's effective. We never get the numbers on our side. And two, the media don't show up and then you put people at risk. But I'm actually really, really agitating, and there's a big protest planned. And if he continues to push us, there'll be thousands out by hook or by crook because, you know, where's this all going? I mean, it can't get any worse for us here. So there's my ramble, but I'm furious.
Thank you. Corin, you've been a journalist in three different nations, New York, London, Sydney, in major national magazines. Has the media class largely got it right in their scrutiny and critique and close examination of the processes and decisions that are being made by those in power now, or have they been effectively state media?
It's a really interesting question. And, you know, I think probably actually the media in each of those three countries that I have lived and worked in, you'd say different things about. You know, the British media is a very different beast to the US media and different to the Australian. But, you know, I guess just to pick up on that point, I was really interested today to read a piece by PVO, Peter Van Onselen, in the Australian, criticising Dan Andrews. And I would say that that's probably the most important point that anybody sane in this country wants to see from anybody working in the media at this point. They don't want to see left-wing bias at a point like this. It's so clear that what Chairman Dan is doing is wrong. Sane people, whether they're in the media, whether they're living in Victoria or not, we all need to play a role in speaking up against this. And the left-wing bias of mainstream media is really going to be interesting to watch, I think. It really will take lots of people speaking up, that this is a good opportunity for them to do so fast. Otherwise, people, again, are going to lose more faith in the media.
I have to agree. And this is the reason why we do The Good Source. It is somewhat a rhetorical question. But, you know, this is what media needs to be doing. And I certainly have no media training, no journalism training. citizen journalist at best, but I'm not even sure that I want to be called a journalist these days. As I said to Brad with some strong language, I think there's many people who give journalism a name not much better than used car salesman. And that's an industry which, of course, there's great people in. I actually just bought a used car today. But there's so many people that have given it such a bad name that overall the public perception of the trustworthiness of the average professional in that industry is very low. So that's something we're trying to fix is, look, we don't want to be media. We actually just want to be independent and we want to be transparent.
The most important thing for any journalist to do, wherever you work, is to ask questions. And what people want, readers or your audience, whatever that, they want to see people who aren't afraid to ask the really important questions. They're not afraid to hold people to account. And they're interested in telling real stories. The real problem that I think we're seeing really right around the globe in the media is each media pocket is telling a narrative. And the real good thing about social media is that actually real people have now got a voice and real people are seeing right. that what they're being told by mainstream media isn't reflective of reality. We see it time and time again. We're seeing it with some of the social media and the video footage that's coming out of the US. You know, we've seen footage from Portland, Chicago. We're seeing what's going on. And that's not what the mainstream media is trying to tell us, because ultimately they know or they think that it would help Trump. So, you know, this is the mess that we're in with the media. And it's all become incredibly transparent because social media has shone such a bright light on that now.
Yeah. Let me address a common criticism very briefly, because I want to ask Steve a question. And that is that people will sometimes accuse us, six conservatives here talking on a conservative website, of being just another echo chamber. Well, no, here's the deal. The echo chamber is what you get on your TV 24/7 and most of the main sheets, the broadsheets, the daily newspapers. That is the echo chamber. Providing the balance to that imbalance is the acoustic treatment for that echo chamber. And we don't pretend to be objective, nonpartisan, unopinionated. When we're giving you opinion, we very clearly identify what that is. On the website, all the articles that are opinion are labeled and categorized opinion. And then all of the articles that we write, which are pure news without opinion or commentary, are labeled briefing. We want to be transparent in that. Unlike a topic that we're going to get to very shortly. But Steve, tell me, what do you think? Has the media been executing their job well? Where do you see room for improvement, if any?
Thank you, David. I was only talking about the media with my father the other day. I suppose I'm very different to many people, having lived in a dictatorial country, Indonesia, and my very young years under Suharto. I was unfortunate to live through the persecution of the media. I was very unfortunate to live as a young boy through the persecution of people via the very pointed end of a gun. Media is twofold, David, and the rest of the panel and your viewing audience. Its purpose is based on what Hearst was doing in California and the States. It's based on two things, content and distribution. That's where it makes its money. Now, following the content and distribution on a 24-hour basis cycle is just never-ending. It needs to fill up 24 hours a day of news content, and then it needs to distribute it. When I was a young fellow growing up, the news only happened 6 p.m., but now it's got 24 news periods per day and even maybe 48 if you do it every half hour. So when I look at Daniel Andrews down in Victoria, I think I'm a very objective person, Dave. We've known each other for a long time. We've actually disagreed on quite a lot of things, but we've always given each other the respect. When I read Peter Van Olsen's article today, I thought, like Marika, well, if Peter is saying that, then basically there is something wrong down there, even if you're trying to be unobjective, let alone objective. I always reiterate to the viewers and to people I talk with, it's the people's parliament. You cannot suspend, unless you can get away with it, you cannot spend an Australian parliament basically for 18 months. I have lived in a dictatorial country. I don't know if anyone else is, and it's not to say, oh, look at me, I've done this, have you? I remember it. I remember people being murdered in front of my mother and I. I distinctly remember it as a nine-year-old boy. I distinctly remember the absence of the press. And why? Because they were terrified. I distinctly and will never, ever forget it. I don't want to see the people of Victoria's opportunity for their elected representatives not to be present in their parliament. I do not care what side or lane you take in your politics. I want your members of parliament, Sandringham, Warrnambool, Sale, wherever you are, to go and sit in Mareika's parliament. Yeah, I know, done again. The parliament must sit. It cannot be suspended. This is an Australian democracy. It is not an Indonesian 1975 dictatorial regime. This is Australia. There is no reason not to sit. Our federal parliament sits today. Queensland has sat. You can do this virtually. They're proving it in Canberra as we speak tonight, that you can do it virtually. It doesn't matter what you're going to debate in your people's parliament. What matters is if the parliament is not sitting for its elected representatives of the people to be debating topics. If we lose topics, if the cat doesn't cross the road to get to the other side, we lost the debate. But it has to sit for that debate to happen.
Yep.
And if we lose, we lose. And contrarily, if the other side loses, the other side loses.
Yep.
We have men and women, whatever gender there are, that have fought for us in countless wars, Labor, Liberal, Greens, Tutti Frutti's, whatever you want to call any one of political spectrums. Now, they have fought for allow these parliaments to sit. How could this parliament of Victoria not sit when it sat in the Great Depression, when it sat in the Spanish flu, when it sat in the world wars? We have now got technology where six people tonight can communicate to an entire national and international audience. How can a parliament not virtually sit? It's inexcusable. And I'm not going to get into the jingoistic un-Australian. Every Labor person, every Liberal person, every Green person, every independent person's Victorian parliament must sit for the people. And it doesn't matter what the outcome is. Mareika is one person of many Victorians who must have their parliament sit, and whatever happens, happens. But for it not to sit, for it to be extended for 12 months, defies common courtesy to 5.5 million Victorians. And remember that the rest of Australia, the Australian federal taxpayer, pays for JobKeeper, pays for JobSeeker. I don't mind my Queensland taxes helping out my Victorian persons because we're all Australians. But what I do mind when my Queensland parliament sits is not having my Victorian persons of any political party not sit. We are a democracy. We are not anything else but that, and that is the pure fundamental thing I share with my two children. And if they want to have different opinions to their dad, I'm all for it, but they must have their parliaments wherever they live in this country or territories. They must sit. End of story.
Karina Okotel, as a past vice president of both the state and federal Liberal Party in Victoria and Australia, is there anything in your understanding of how Parliament works that now 6 months down the track justifies an emergency power which the Parliament itself is ill-equipped and doesn't have the information or the agility to implement as good public policy?
No, absolutely not. As Steve was, very eruditely describing, Parliament has always sit in all kinds of circumstances. Why it would be limited at this time, in this day and age, is incredible. People are having business meetings, legal documents are signed, all, happening virtually. Rules have been changed very rapidly. Schools are, completely different today. Remote learning is happening. Everything is proceeding. You've got telehealth. there is absolutely no excuse for Parliament to refuse to allow that kind of oversight, and then for the government to say, well, the medical advice is we can't meet, therefore it's, you know, we shouldn't go ahead, is quite incredible. Because of course, as we've all discussed, it can happen virtually. Everything else is happening virtually. Things aren't stopping because we have to. People still have to go to work, you know, if they can, unfortunately. And the reality is, you know, as Marika described in Victoria, people are absolutely outraged. I've been, you know, quite shocked that people who are rusted on Labor supporters, they are actually starting to turn and say, I don't think Daniel Andrews will survive. And, you know, when we have such passionate members of Parliament, as we saw Brad Lakewell earlier on, you know, I think people are going to say that it's people who actually care about the community, people who want to fight for the community that they need to see in government, not people who just want to grab more and more power, people who want to sit on that power and not allow any scrutiny or transparency. That has to end. That is not what Australians expect, not at all. We expect our parliament to be functioning. It is
exactly right.
It is an incredible state of affairs, and I think Daniel Andrews completely out of touch. He treats us in his daily briefings like we're absolute children. I mean, so patronising. Like, this is very complicated in his tweets. He writes, this is very complicated for you to understand why we might be extending the state of emergency. No, we're not. We know exactly what you're doing, and we see through it as well.
Speaking of Daniel Andrews treating people as children, let's have a look at this tweet, and then we'll come to you first, Lyle, to have a look. This is a tweet from Daniel Andrews, care of the nation's biggest moron.
Tell you what, I am so over this lockdown. Playing netball against yourself is not all it's cracked up to be, especially when you still can't even win. But you know what? It's not the lockdown that's the enemy. It's the virus. And the sooner we obey the rules, the sooner this will all be
over. It's your
fault,
Victorians.
We can get back to the stuff that really matters. Netty. Subbing myself back in now. I know, Sharon, you're hopeless. I am not hopeless. I'm the most valued member
of
this team.
So there's Daniel Andrews sharing a really great political advertisement from Shazza, nation's biggest moron character, thankfully not a real-life politician. Nevertheless, the message is very clear. If only we lock down this time, it'll be all good. This time, everything will be different, and it's your fault. We just have to obey the rules. Lyle, well,
just 2 points, Dave. Just to pick up on Steve and Karina, the only parliament that didn't sit during World War II was the Reichstag. So I just make that point. As for Shazza,
the German parliament, for those who don't know what the Reichstag is, the German parliament.
That's right. And look, you know, you're not supposed to mention the Nazis and make those sort of parallels. And I'm not for 1 minute saying that Daniel Andrews is going to, you know, cut Jews off to the gas chamber or anyway,
I agree,
sort of drawing parallels there. But, well, I guess I am drawing a parallel, not in the genocidal side of things, but in the way that any human person who has power can be corrupted. And I think that's the point that needs to be made here. You know, the Nazis, after they came to power in the early 1930s, it wasn't long before the Reichstag just didn't sit. They abused all the power and trashed all the conventions, and, you know, the rest is history. Now, I'm not saying Victoria's on that sort of trajectory, but the reason why we have checks and balances in our Westminster parliamentary democracy is to have checks and balances so that powerful people don't get out of control. As for Magna, Dave, the last time I encountered her was on the set of Sunrise in Sydney, where we were debating whether or not marriage should be redefined, and she gave the country bad advice then. And you know, she was less than civil to me in the green room behind the scenes. She could barely abide my presence, which I think says something about the Love and Tolerance Brigade. The last advice she gave to Australia proved to be a wrong turn, and I don't think she's giving Australia very good advice through this netball commercial.
No, look, let's move along at a clip. I actually didn't want to do a lot of overtime tonight, but we are actually filling the content rather rapidly. But on the topic of what you're just talking about, there's a great article just fresh to the good source by Augusto Zimmerman, professor of constitutional law in Western Australia. And he basically draws that same parallel, Lyle, that you're drawing. And he's very, very careful, like you, to say, not comparing Hitler's agenda to Daniel Andrews' agenda, but what is comparable is the process by which it all started. And what we have to, as the caretakers of democracy, the voters, what we have to be very careful of is looking for those tyrants don't advertise their tyranny on their way in. Dictators don't advocate for a oppressive rule of the people when they're still trying to get the people on side. What they started with in Germany was the continual extension of emergency powers. Right. And as Karina and Steve have been saying, there's absolutely no reason the parliament can't do its job right now. There's absolutely no justification. If this is the new normal, which we keep hearing about, is democracy out the window the new normal? Is democracy the old normal? Is the parliament both sitting? Like, this is just absolutely ridiculous. I recommend going to the website, checking out that article from Augusto Zimmerman.
I didn't know it was there, Dave. I promised you. I haven't looked at the good source today, to my shame.
Indeed. Now, look, one of the things we promised people we would talk about tonight, and we've only got 10 minutes left of regular time, and that is the fake news that we've seen in the Australian. We're promised that there's going to be more coming out tomorrow. So let me add that to the stream right now. And why don't we have a little look through this? The Australian by Associate Editor John Ferguson. Explosive secret tapes and the hard right religious plot. We just need a nice sound effect now. Dun, dun, dun. The Christians are coming for you. The Victorian Liberal Party's hard right actively recruited members to branches as part of a plot to promote, wait for it, religious candidates for pre-selection and place conservative warlords in electorates to organise internal activities. No, other than some pejoratives and hyperbole, there's nothing unusual there. The secret strategy was laid out in an explosive high-level discussion between former federal Liberal Vice President Karina Okotel and another senior Liberal Party member, unnamed, unreferenced. The Weekend Australian understands the discussion was recorded. Do we get any details of that recording? No. Do we get any quotes from that recording? No. Do we know anybody else who was there? No. So much for the headline. Ms. Okotel is understood to have privately admitted the existence of a party database covering Conservative members and that she was recruiting members in the lead up to the federal election. Karina Okotel, hitting question. Do you believe in the Menzian theory of a large democratic party representing a broad policy decision-making base? You're muted, sorry. We've lost a really great take there.
Absolutely. When Menzies inaugurated the party in 1944, in his initial speech in Albury, he said that he wanted to see the party number, you know, scores upon scores of people.
But scores of thousands to be able of to people.
Contribute to. Yes.
Not just 60.
No. In its first year, in fact, he called for that. To ensure that there's contribution to policy development for members to have a voice. So, yes, a big party is so important. Again, as we talked about before, checks and balances. It's very hard for a small minority of people who are in power to be able to wield it in any kind of tyrannical way if there is a check and balance of the people being able to have a voice. So, yes, but I was quite, you know, interested in this plan of warlords in electorates. I'm like, why did I come up with that? I wish I did. That's so good. Yeah.
Which is a colourful word for somebody who's organising perhaps something so strong as a faction. Imagine those existing anywhere.
Yeah, well.
Well, let's see what other cracking, hard-hitting journalism this journalist has for us. Ms. Ockertel, who has told people, "We are not crazy hardline nuts," admitted she blew up her relationship with power broker Michael Kroger and his backers because she was furious that religious candidates were not being pre-selected by the faction. Karina, do you really want to admit here and now, or do you want to deny here and now that you're not trying to recruit people like you into the party? Come on. I mean, really? You're religious.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. As I think we talked about some weeks back, I do want to see more people who share liberal values, and indeed they are conservative values, people who will stand up for freedom of speech, freedom of religion, who will stand up for the family unit, for free enterprise, getting involved in the party, 110%. That is who I want to see involved in our party to, you know, build up our membership. It's Brad Rosewell said, if we are going to overcome Daniel Andrews in this state of Victoria, we need those boots on the ground. And sadly, we had an absolutely devastating, you know, electoral wipeout at the last state election. To be able to achieve government is going to be a mammoth task. And we need people on board, people who are, you know, inspired to fight for the values of what a Liberal Party represents. And that certainly includes values that would never allow for a government to just go on ruling without any scrutiny, without allowing a parliament to sit. You know, shutting down democracy is the absolute opposite. And that is, again, why Menzies called for a big party, so that democracy could be alive within the Liberal Party. Very much opposed to what the Labor Party stand for, which in fact takes away the rights of members to be able to have a voice. I know, you know, in my weekly wrap-up last Friday, I had Steve Campbell, the national director of the DLP, explaining why the DLP split and why, you know, even he thought it's basically pointless now to join the Labor Party because members don't actually get a say. The unions ultimately have that power to override any decision of the membership, including pre-selections.
Yeah. Well, this wonderful piece of prize-winning journalism continues. Liberal Party, with writing that's probably better suited to the Women's Weekly, Liberal Party sources familiar with the conversation do not wish to be named, but have expressed shock at her comments, and the conversation is now the subject of gossip in Liberal Party circles. Sources have told The Weekend Australian that Ms. Ockertel outlined a strategy of introducing conservative warlords in each electoral council in a bid to decentralise factional power. Sounds democratic. And prevent a blow-up that occurred in 2018 when... And here's the bit that really indicts you, Karina. You did not get your way with the faction then run by Mr. Kroger and Marcus Bastion, and strongly supported by Mr. Whatever his name is. So, Karina, you don't have a lot in common with Marcus Bastion, it turns out?
Look, I haven't spoken with Marcus for a number of years. But certainly the vision that I would like to see our party embrace is that of what Robert Menzies espoused, and that is one where we have a party that invites people regardless of, you know, any of the attributes of, you know, race, religion, sexuality, any of those attributes, but people who share our core liberal values to get involved and to make a contribution, a real contribution on the ground to be able to defeat the Labor Party, right. Not one that that is about power and control of a party for one's own ends. And I suppose that is something that I'm really passionate about seeing, is that, you know, movements, political parties, we saw it in the expose about Adam Sumurek in the Labor Party. A lot of people can see the power of politics and can try and wield that power for themselves and their own ends. And you know, a friend who's been involved in politics for a very long time told me everyone gets involved because they want to change the world. And then slowly, you know, they start compromising because power and that lust for power becomes so appealing, and that, you know, just minute compromises along the way, you ultimately end up, you know, like a Frankenstein of what you started off as this person who wanted to change the world. So, you know, what we really need to see is people who, you know, it really resonated with people when Donald Trump, you know, started talking about the swamp and draining the swamp. And that's because, yes, politics is a swamp, but the only way to change it is for good people to get involved. And we need more people who actually want to see change, get involved for the right reasons, not to try and just control a party.
So that whole article was just appalling in the promise of the headline and the failure to deliver. A huge, big nothing burger, basically talking about what Menzies envisioned, people recruiting people like themselves to the party, coordinating and trying to get their policies represented.
Yeah,
and naturally, birds of a feather flock together.
Well, I was waiting for the secret tapes because I'm thinking, who's been recording me? Who is this person? I want to know.
What is with that? Corin, you've written a great article we're hoping to publish tomorrow or the next day on The Good Source, just reviewing some of the comments. And the sneak peek, your article, in your opinion, as a journalist, the litmus test of how good your article is how the public is reacting to it. Why don't you take us through some of the reactions beneath this fantastic piece of gossip journalism?
Journalism. I always say that actually reading an article in mainstream media these days is never as revealing as digesting the mood of the comments. And like what you'll hear lots of journalists say is, oh, I don't read the comments. In my opinion, that's really egotistical, it's really arrogant, and you've got no business being a journalist if you don't look at the comments, because they're actually your insight into whether you're aligned or out of touch with your audience. So actually, what's really interesting about this article is not the article itself at all, which is just very bizarre and blustery with no real substance. There are over 500 comments pretty quickly on this, and it was deliciously, I loved this, the most read, most liked comment said, "Warlords, hard right, this all sounds like someone's fervid imagination." And then the second most liked comment just underneath that was, "It's interesting that people with Christian values are represented as nutters, yet rarely do we see the socially progressive left labelled as hardline socialist. Please advise all the Christian conservative parliamentarians so I can give them my vote." So you can see the mood of the people there is very much on Karina's side. You know, the language is really bizarre at the beginning of that piece, which I'm always suspicious of very, very emotive language, especially right at the beginning, because it's setting a tone and it's setting an agenda. And setting an agenda is the opposite of pursuing the truth. So, but look how delicious that is that someone's picked straight up on that and they've gone for those words. You know, warlords, that's really emotive. Hard right. It's not hard right to have liberal values and to stand up for what you believe in. That's not hard right. What is hard right anyway? I mean, it's one of those echo chambery media words that people latch onto. But it doesn't mean anything to your average Joe walking down the street. They don't talk in terms of hard right. And then there's nothing to back that up anyway. So I just think it's really, really interesting looking at some of those comments flowing in, because people are basically sticking a finger up to the article going, yeah, not so much. No, thanks.
Yeah. I love this comment from Neil, a plot to actively recruit members. Actively recruit members. OMG, whoever heard of that? And most especially Christian people. What is this world coming to? Somebody else asked for a royal commission into the recruitment of Christians into politics. Yeah. Terrible, terrible, terrible,
Dave,
journalism.
It's a shame that John Ferguson doesn't know anything about Robert Menzies or history when he writes an article like that. I'm going to get the quote slightly wrong, but in David First Roberts' book, the forgotten speeches where he edited a whole bunch of Menzies' less well-known speeches. Menzies, who was a reasonably devout Presbyterian, said that the most important relationship that a man had was with his maker. Forgive the sexist language, but that's Menzies' words in paraphrase. So, you know, if religious people in the Liberal Party is a problem, well, then Robert Menzies himself was a problem. Menzies clearly spoke out against communism and its desires to break down and destroy what the communists called bourgeois marriage. And Menzies quotes from the Communist Manifesto's declaration that it wants to destroy bourgeois marriage. Menzies supported marriage between a man and a woman and the natural family. Maybe Menzies was hard right. He certainly would be by today's standards and certainly by the standards of some of the so-called modern liberals who are trying to redefine what Menzies stood for. So good on you, Karina. You're actually mainstream Menzian. It's a pity John Ferguson doesn't know the slightest thing about history and has never read any of Menzies' speeches.
Hear, hear.
Marijke, let's bring you in. You're one of the people who helps recruit and make the party bigger in Victoria. Why do you do that? What's the benefit? What's the downside? You're on mute. You've muted yourself. We can't help.
I was mute. I've got five new chickens in the background. So
I love the sounds of home in the broadcast. It's great.
Food storage. Food storage. It's important down here. Anyway, I actually was one of those, and I've always said this, I was just a mum at home, busy with my kids, and I had no idea how the political system worked. And when I found out how it worked, I thought, why have I kept this a secret from me? Why did I not know this? You know, in order to change policy, you have to have policymakers who represent you. And I hadn't even thought about it until suddenly policy was becoming problematic, you know, through programs in the schools and all kinds of things. And so I actually I thought, right, well, if this is a numbers game, then and you know, we had Brad's impassioned speech, and ultimately what he's saying is, you know, there was a few comments and people were saying we can't change things from outside of the tent. And it's actually, it is true. You can make a lot of noise, but ultimately you have to have the numbers. And this is where it's quite frightening that people need to be lobbying all the members of Parliament at the moment on both sides, because ultimately it comes down to who has the numbers in Parliament. And so the antidote to all of the concerns and the worries, and, you know, communism is actually Christian, Judeo-Christian values. And I had seen quite clearly how the Liberal Party didn't actually represent strong opposition. And that was clear over the last few years. There was no opposition. And I'm disappointed to say that I cannot see any other way to change this, because I'm telling you, it's not pretty. But at the end of the day, if you don't actually change the numbers in the buildings, if you know, where policy is created, that's as simple as I can put it, you will never actually change things. And so it starts from the grassroots up. And so I was actually what you would probably classify as a useful idiot, because I was very impassioned, and you can see that, and very passionate about what I wanted to do, and obviously you know, was unaware of the wolves that you know are sometimes within politics. And so did become, you know, the puppets above, and unfortunately the big promise they gave was that we're going to put people into positions who represent you and your values, which aren't hard right, which are mainstream Australian, which stand up for mums and dads. But, you know, there was a promise given. And then when we had actually started gaining the numbers, and they started to put these people into positions that did not represent us, you know, you could see how so many people were being used. And that, to me, is the issue. There is no problem with recruiting and reforming. And, in fact, I encourage everybody across the country, there is only one way we can change this, and I hate that. I wish, because it's horrible, and you've got to be weathered and you've got to be strong, but at the end of the day, there is no other way. And if you want your children and your grandchildren to have their freedoms, we better make the opposition party an actual opposition party, and give them a spine And they only get a spine if they've got the numbers behind them saying, yep, I'm going to put you back in your job. So that's what it came down to for me. But unfortunately, you know, you have to be like as wise as serpents and gentle as doves, I think is how it goes. You know, you've got to go in knowing it's a bloody gruesome war, and people lie and they cheat and they are dishonest, and they will play, you know, the Machiavellian Christian and use those things. So go in wise and careful and prayerful, and you know what? It's a war. Get involved. And that's what it comes down to, and that's why hundreds of people, you know, my church, you know, often get slandered, but they got involved because the church I belong to was the only church that actually in the United States in the 1800s had a state mandate on them to kill this religion, our religion. And so my faith is all about freedom. If you don't have your freedom, what else do you have? So it wasn't that we were stupid. We're passionate about actual freedom. And so Christians across the country, of every denomination, of every faith, you know, and good people who have values, you have to get involved if you want your freedom, or it is gone.
Yeah. Well, the getting involved of people, and I'm just going to summarize and wrap this up and then move on to another topic. But there are some lessons to be learnt from the story which came out on 60 Minutes on Sunday night, and that is a whole bunch of people who were trying to do the right thing and join the party and really match what the leftists have done for decades, and that's the infiltration of institutions. And anybody who would dispute the fact that the Liberal Party has been dragged to the left to the point that a Liberal Party, allegedly right-wing prime minister, would march in the gay Mardi Gras protesting against the extant laws of the land, and then boast as a achievement that he's undefined marriage, you know, the evidence is well and truly conclusive that the Liberal Party, the right-wing party, has been well and truly infiltrated by leftist agendas. And that's okay. They played by the rules. Now we need to play by the rules. Right-thinking people who want to restore the nation to the ideals that our founding fathers once held for us, then those people are just as entitled to play by the rules and play ethically. One question recently in the stream, if we can maybe find that, Adam, was essentially, how do you do this right? Well, we've seen that a whole bunch of good people with good intentions have been manipulated and led astray by people who talked the talk but didn't walk the walk. They tried to help get people pre-selected who didn't share conservative, right-thinking values or policies at all. These people were proudly pro-abortion, proudly pro-homosexual marriage, and other things which, you know, were really dubious credentials for a conservative. And this at the cost of people who had strong conservative values. So the lesson for people here is, if you don't want to be part of a branch stack, well, pay your own money to be a member, join for your reasons and not somebody else's, and be an active, independent thinking person who is not led astray, not easily manipulated, who will take and gather evidence from a number of people and then think and vote for yourself. Why? To defeat Labor. To defeat Labor with the best candidates that the right of centre party has to offer in Australia. And who are the best candidates? The people that look like you, the people that think like you, the people that talk like you. And here's the deal breaker: the people that vote like you in conventions and in parliaments. And if their voting record says they're moderate, which is the euphemism for far leftist progressive, then they're not conservatives. It doesn't matter what badge they put on. If they're like Kevin Rudd and stand out the front of a church doing a photo op every weekend, but then proceed to advocate the opposite of what God wants, that's not Christian policy. You can't support it. I don't care if my plumber's a Christian. I need him qualified to fix the pipes. Same deal for my politicians. I don't care what they're doing on Sunday. What I care is what they're doing in Parliament and in the party. And if they're dragging my party away from family, conservative, traditional Christian values, they're not going to get my support. They're entitled to support, just not mine. So people, to get this right, don't abdicate, like Marika's saying. Don't sit on the sidelines. Get into the battle, but don't be some pawn of somebody else. Think for yourself. Fight for yourself. Turn up. Be counted. Be heard. And be an independent thinking person looking for the candidates who represent you. That is the Liberal Party that Robert Menzies started.
Dave, can I just jump in? I know I've said a bit tonight, but I knew Marcus Bastion and had breakfast with him about 5 or 6 years ago. Great, talented young fella. And I remember warning him at the time, you know, as Christians getting involved in politics, that's a good thing. We should try and recruit, play by the rules. I said, let's not ever behave in a Machiavellian spirit. You know, we are not Graham Richardsons who do whatever it takes. I've warned him and I've warned others. I'm all for, as Marika said, getting good people involved, as Karina's been involved in. Let's encourage good people to get involved. But unfortunately, power and manipulation go with politics, and it can even sweep up good people, and I think that's what's happened. And unfortunately, Marcus was caught in recordings, you know, saying some terrible things, saying things that are potentially advocating things that were potentially illegal, and also using terrible language that's unbecoming of people who purport to operate in the spirit of Christ. I am sick and tired of the use of the F word in politics. I've seen Christians use it over and over again. It's the lingua franca of politics on both sides. Kevin Rudd, put himself forward as this wonderful Christian in Kevin 07, you know, he was one of the worst exponents of the F word. And it's right across politics. I'm sick of it. I think if you're going to be in politics, we need people who will operate in the spirit of Jesus as a humble servant leader. And I you might say, well, that's, you know, naive and idealistic. Well, so be it. But I think that's the way it's meant to be. The reason in civil society we have rules and constitutions and ways of engaging civilly is because of our Christian roots, and that's the way the game should be played. And I don't care whether you're on the left or the right. If you're into power and manipulation and crass language, then, you know, you're just another hack, and that's not what this country needs to help solve the very real issues that are confronting it.
Yeah, well said, Lyle. And this is the point. If you follow somebody, it's going to turn out that they're human and maybe they misled you. And that's why you have to go in with eyes wide open, constantly assessing the fruit and not the sticker on the sleeve. It doesn't matter what badge or identity they claim. Look at the fruit in their policies and their conversation. Steve, Kyla, we've seen, Victorians in an unusually oppressive state. And one of the best things I love about federalism and why I'm disappointed whenever I hear somebody say abolish states is the fact that we get to compete. And that means people can claim refugee status and leave Victoria. In your investment and economic study circles, what are your contacts in the real estate industry telling you about the evidence, the data? Is there a bit of a migration beginning?
Thanks, Dave, for the question. Yeah, there is. And it's just being purely brought out by blunt numbers. And as a boring economist once, and a person who's free from all the obligatory hassles of life now through good fortune and good luck and good work, yeah, the real estate market in Queensland is showing not only strong resilience but a strong attraction to our far southern counterparts in Victoria. For the Queenslanders on the panel and for the Queenslanders watching tonight, we all know that the Gold Coast was primarily built on the abolition of death duties, and that the Victorian peoples basically flooded our Gold Coast with their monies and repatriated their wealth, their family's wealth, away from Victoria to Queensland. The great thing about living in this country and other liberal, democratic, capitalist countries is that there are freedoms of movement of market, freedoms of movements of peoples, and most importantly, the freedom of capital to move where it gets the best return on its investment opportunities. And you're starting to see here, David, and the rest of the panel, enormous inquiries coming into the Queensland real estate market, going from Coolangatta all the way north and in regional, from Victorian people. And I've got, as I said, people in the real estate industry who will completely back that up with sheer hard facts. And the facts are their phones are ringing off the hook. And for the people that are watching in Victoria and South Australia and Western Australia and across the world, we are now getting real estate purchases sight unseen in Sunshine Coast, which is Noosa, Caloundra, etc., from Victorian people who are buying literally sight unseen and repatriating their money into Queensland. I have always said to people, David, and to the rest of the panel, that the brilliance of money, hard-earned, worked-for money, is it will find its, like water, it'll find its own path. And capital will find its own path to where the best investment opportunities lie. And for Mareika down there in Victoria, and to all the Victorian people who are watching, whether they're from your side of politics or not, capital will find the very thing that hard-working Victorians have worked for. Capital will find its own path. It will find where it's best for the family. The family now in 2020 is defined by the new Marriage Act, and that's what it is. The family will go to where it's best getting its money returned on. And Queensland, amongst other states, is in a position where it can cross-compete against other states for the attraction of capital. Sometimes I think in this whole spectrum, something's being very much missed, and that is when Australia economically starts its recovery path, you've got six states and two territories that sit inside the federal state that are now going to cross-compete for each other's capital, because we're now getting a real contest of where it's best to get my money and my family moving in, working in for the next periods of time. We saw it, David and Lyle, with the Gold Coast. And for anyone who flies into the Gold Coast, Sir Bruce Small built that Gold Coast on the abolition of death duties, and it was Victorian money. No one else's money. It was Victoria's money that built the Gold Coast in the 70s through Sir Bruce Small and the abolition of death duties. It was the repatriation of capital. And in 2021 and thereafter, the smart state, whoever those treasurers are going to look at this as being the opportunity to recalibrate the economic chessboard, and whoever is both foreseeing the future and understanding that hard-working plumbers, as we talked about before, hairdressers, teachers, nurses, carpenters, barristers, taxi owners, journalists are going to repatriate their money where the best economic opportunity is in 2022 and onwards. And the state premiers and the territorial ministers maybe do not realise it, but there is a forthcoming battle of treasuries across this country to get your capital into whoever state it is. And the best persons, plurally, are going to realise that. And I'll put it on record for you here at 9:18. The state that's leading the race to repatriate the Australian dollar to their state, and I don't care what colour of the political spectrum you want to put it, is New South Wales. They are understanding economically that they are in the race to get the capital. I am very intrigued to see if other states get in 2022 how this is going to play out for them, because there is an enormous repatriation possibility and opportunity for clever treasurers and clever premiers to repatriate Victoria's money to their money, because the attraction is low taxes will allow families to keep their hard-earned wealth and provide opportunities for their families. And the real estate data in Queensland is reflecting that Corinne and Mareika's constituents of whatever persuasion they are starting to vote very seriously, not with their politics, but with their wallets. And once you lose control of someone's wallet, then the politician should very quickly wake up, because wallets surpass politics in this country every day of the week.
Well, if you're in Victoria and you'd like to move to Queensland, we would like to have you. The more people who watch this show who come and help vote out the Labor government here, appreciate it. But at the same time, yeah, maybe we'll just have to build a wall around Victoria. Does anybody just really...
Dave, we've got to have a resistance. We're part of the resistance.
Well, let's have a quick look at that. And we might begin to wrap up here. We'll, we won't have a short comment. Feel free to take a minute, a couple of minutes to comment on this. But let's have a look at the news and then the Facebook event. There is a protest planned for not this Saturday, but next Saturday, the 5th of September in Melbourne. And without knowing anything about this at all, then I actually think this is a great idea. I mean, we surely Victorians need to now be doing everything within their power, short of armed resistance. But then again, the population's been disarmed, so that's not possible, exactly what dictators do. But let's have a look at the Daily Mail. Adam, if you can just bring that up. There's a headline planned there. It's right at the top. Another Eureka stockade chilling warning. Let's have a look at it on my computer. I've got I've got it without the ads.
It's a graphic ad.
That was weird.
It's not the coronavirus.
I've got the wrong thing up. There we go. That's the thing I'm looking for. And there's the link. Copy, paste. Here we go. Brave browser, no ads. There we go. Exclusive, another Eureka stockade. Look, this. I hope this is wrong. Chilling warning, blood will be spilled on the streets as 11,000 furious Melburnians vow to take the streets to protest any stage four lockdown extension. Look, here's the caution I would urge is, guys, let's not be very careful of a protest that could be hijacked by really toxic elements. That would be really tragic. And if that happens, just call it off, go home. That'll be unfortunate.
The real danger there, Dave, is Antifa are going to turn up and, you know, start creating melees for the TV cameras to make it look like the violence has originated from the protesters. I've seen that happen at events that I've run in Melbourne.
Yeah, that's right.
You have two, Dave. You have two in your tours.
Yeah, I have two. And the real danger is in Victoria. They're worse than anywhere else in Australia. Yeah. Basically, Berkeley. Look. So here's the. Now I've got to try and find the Facebook page. We'll throw that up now. 50,000, 500,000 to end. I think that's a bit of an aspiration, not an actual confirmed number. That like 500,000 people to turn up. And look, realistically, hopefully you can be one of those people who don't sit by and watch a democratically elected government extend emergency powers into the end of democracy. It's well and truly within the grasp of any parliament to manage the new normal, quote unquote. It is absolutely, in my opinion, no need for emergency powers. But let's head around the panel. Corin, what do you think about these? What are your comments, your random thoughts on this protest, 5th of September?
You used a really interesting expression earlier. You talked about democracy dissolving, and I think that's a really, literally encapsulates exactly what's going on, and it's exactly why people need to mobilise. But I would just say on the cautionary side of that, the vast majority of sane people in this country and around the globe have very low tolerance at this point for violence getting out of hand.
Mm.
And there is an art to peaceful protest and art to advancing your cause rather than losing the majority along the way. So they need to be, I know that the numbers there were slightly pie in the sky. I think it said 24,000 potentially interested. Let's see how many of those turn up. But let's hope that it's a protest that remembers what its point is rather than just using it as an excuse for violence and looting and the kind of absolute craziness that we've seen on the streets of America.
Yeah. Lyle?
I share Corinne's concerns there. Where peaceful protest has worked in the past has been when there's been good leadership, like Martin Luther King Jr., who was able to mobilise, you know, very angry people, and rightly so, in the black African American communities in the 1960s. But he didn't allow any violence, and they held peaceful protests, which did involve civil disobedience, but they were not the ones involved in the violence. It was the police and the overreaction from some of the white authorities who sent dogs and, you know, water cannon and the like in. Gandhi, of course, another great leader. My fear for this protest would be, I don't know who's leading it. It doesn't seem like there's a sane voice out the front saying, this is, you know, how we are going to protest and present ourselves. I think the cause is just. I think to protest Dan Andrews taking these powers, that must be resisted. And I'm really torn about where we go with coronavirus and how we deal with it. I think there has to be, you know, some medical response. There has to be some sacrifice from us in the community to try and control this virus, but I don't think it has to be at the hands of autocratic chief medical officers and dictatorial premiers. And yeah. I can't see why the parliament can't meet to debate all the evidence, pro and con. Do lockdowns work? Do they not? Does hydroxychloroquine work? You know, how can we as sensible adults meet this challenge without destroying our economy rather than just having dictates? I think, you know, we're past that phase of the crisis now where we were prepared to accept some limitations on our freedoms when we didn't know what we were dealing with. We know a little bit more now. We're still discovering more. But I think that needs to be thrashed out in a democratic context, because we can't just keep responding to outbreaks of this virus with hard lockdowns all the time. We have to find a way to keep our economy going, stop people committing suicide, and making sure businesses can flourish. If Dan Andrews has his way, there will be no Victorian economy in 12 months' time, and that's going to hurt the whole country. So we can't allow him to have this power to make it up as he goes along, because there's too much at stake.
Karina.
Look, I absolutely agree with the comments that have been made. I actually do love attending protests because I see it as a privileged democratic right to be able to do so, to have a voice, and to know that we in this country can do it peacefully and not have, you know, threat of being shot or killed is something that we should take seriously and be encouraged to exercise those rights. I think, you know, protesting and showing up numbers in terms of a cause is a very powerful thing. It can, particularly if media attention is drawn to it, and I know that a lot of conservative causes that are protested about, often the media don't turn up, which is, you know, very sad again, but hopefully the good source will be able to remedy that error. You know, I suppose what has been disappointing of particularly of late is when we have seen, you know, protests like the Black Lives Matter protests being hijacked by all kinds of other agendas. I suppose now there's a wariness of people, and, you know, that's been expressed that could indeed happen. And I think that's something that everybody needs to be on their guard about when it comes to protests, to be discerning about, you know, who is running it, who's in charge, what are the agendas behind it? Because I said, no one wants to show up to a protest thinking you're coming to stand up for one issue and find out that, in fact, you're being used as a pawn to try and advocate for a whole range of other issues at the same time that you may not agree with. So I think that's something that we need to be conscious of, you know, given that the recent protests that have happened and the hijacking of those agendas, you know, going forward.
Marika, is it hypocrisy to oppose the Black Lives Matters marches? And would you be opposing all of these laws if it was a Liberal government that was making them?
Yes, I would. Absolutely, it's hypocrisy. Look, I'm never going to get a platform in the Liberal Party. I am an agitator and I am not one to toe a party line. I actually do believe in agitation and I share a lot of what everyone's saying, but at the end of the day, I see this virus being used as a Trojan horse it's not, you know, We've lost our freedoms currently in Victoria, and it doesn't look like they're being returned anytime soon. In terms of a protest, I agree. For a successful protest, you need to have strong leadership and organisation. And you know, I'd love to see the Liberal Party in Victoria get behind this. I'd love to see small business owners who've been smashed. I'd love to even see families, and I don't think that's going to happen. First step, though, is always to lobby your members of parliament. You have to actually, I implore everyone who's watching this, please, please, please ring them, write emails, do everything you can, because there is still a chance that we can sway through policy, and it's a very small chance. But if that doesn't happen, then what? Are we going to sit in our houses forever? I mean, the stuff that is going on here, it's not acceptable. And so, like I said, it's the first time ever I've started to feel like I may need to attend a protest. But I have concerns as well, and I will be watching as to how it's organised. I think people wanted me to lead the charge. I'm not doing that. I'm barely struggling to manage my own family at the moment. No, I'm not doing that. But I guess I'm no longer one to actually. It's not a conspiracy. What's going on? Because it's happening. It's no longer a conspiracy.
It is a conspiracy. It's just not a theory.
So ultimately, anyway, I've said my piece. I don't know. I certainly won't be telling anyone if I'm going, because Antifa will put a great big on my forehead. But anyway, I'll have my mask on, so maybe they won't recognise me. Who knows?
Steve, should this be nationwide if it's organised in Brisbane? Are you tired enough of the oppressive laws going on here? I think somebody sneezed in Cairns, and I'm grateful Palaszczuk didn't have a big red button to launch a nuclear attack, because I'm pretty sure that's the level of overreaction going on right now. Are you mad enough to attend a protest?
Well, Dave, you have known me an awfully long time, and I probably can't have to a lot of people. I follow the money. I follow the money since I was 18 or 19, and I'm probably one of the people that direct the money sometimes. The money will follow where the best return is, and these Australian premiers and territory ministers, they can do what they like now, but the money will disappear right in front of them. If I'm an investor, I wouldn't go near the state of Victoria at the moment. How on earth could I even remotely go and have a conversation with my member of parliament about anything, be it the NDIS, uranium, wind turbines, social policy? They don't sit. I can't even get access to them. It's the most brutal thing I would say with your audience tonight is that every single person, and I know it sounds like a broken record, but in our family we have divergence of opinions on just about everything. But the one thing we all agree on is that Mareika's parliament and Karen's parliament has to sit. It doesn't matter how it sits in 2020, virtually, in real person, but it has to sit. The money and the Victorian treasurer has to, it doesn't really have to, has to, in my opinion, wake up. The money will not come to Victoria. Why on goodness earth or you, or anyone at all of any political persuasion watching anywhere tonight, invest in Victoria? They talk about sovereign risk. How on earth could I put any capital into manufacturing, social policy, anything, if the parliament won't sit? Because what happens if the money gets invested and the parliament changes its mind about what was a good investment for social outcomes? There's no debate about anything. There's nothing to be discussed. I can come to seven other states or territories and invest in things that matter to whoever it is that I'm representing, if it's myself or whoever, because they sit. This is something David and the rest of the panel and your people watching tonight that's not remotely being discussed. March 2021 is when JobKeeper stops. That's when the states and the territories are no longer being propped up by the Australian taxpayer, and they are then literally on their own as to how they make this all go forward. And it's going to be the battle of the fittest and the battle of the persons who can keep writing out checks. And it's going to be critical to watch how this all unfolds, because when it comes to April 2021, the smart treasurer and the smart governments are going to go, you know what? We need capital to invest in public housing, public infrastructure, because your audience, if you're watching David's program tonight, there is a massive competition for private capital all across the world to prop up the following countries or continents: Europe, North America, the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. The money that we're borrowing, when you go to AOFM, comes from private capital, and it is being savagely competed for in 2021, 2022, 2023, and thereafter. These federal government deficits, which prop up JobKeeper, are being funded by international investments and local superannuation funds. And we have to wake up to the fact, David, that this is what we're vitally competing for: private funds propping up the investments into our future communities. And if Victoria is going to put up this front to the Australian populace and international investors, it will just spook and terrify people away from propping up money into that economy in 2022-2023. I'd say one last thing. Why would I and anyone watching tonight invest into Victoria in 2022-2023 if I could invest in Western Australia or Queensland or Tasmania? What would be the attraction point to invest in it if its democracy will not sit for all of its 5.5 million people, all of its 88 seats, and it doesn't matter who they are in those seats, it's the people's parliament. And if there's one thing I'm savagely disappointed for Australia tonight, is that 88 members of parliament in Victoria, representing the one quarter of Australia's GDP and turnover, is possibly not sitting until 2021 September. It's hard to literally believe this is happening, but it is. And Victoria deserves a hell of a lot better. And the rest of the country, if we're all on this together, deserves a lot more than having one of our states not being democratically sitting. Yep. It's just not Australian.
It isn't. And if you're in Victoria right now, it's battle stations. It's a foregone conclusion that Daniel Andrews is going to ram this through using the numbers he has in the lower house. And then he's going to try and do horse trading and whatever it takes with the crossbenchers in the Legislative Council, the upper house. They're really the people you need to be calling. Call your Labor members and express your discontent, your local member, and promise that this is a deal breaker for you, that you'll never be voting for them again, that you're an undecided voter, and this is a deal breaker, depending on how they vote. But call your upper house members. Call every politician that represents you and let them know that you want Parliament making decisions, not unelected bureaucrats with emergency powers that go on and on and on ad infinitum. That's what the Parliament is for. Dissolved democracy is not the new normal. And you will punish any politician at the polls whose voting record indicates they supported the ongoing expansion of dictatorship powers. That's a great place to leave it for tonight. If you've enjoyed this show, let me encourage you to pay it forward. Now, this show is free and we don't want to put any paywalls on it. The whole Good Source platform is free and we're bringing you a new show every single day. And check out this Thursday morning for a new show from Professor David Flint called Take Back Your Country, which should be of great deal of interest. And Professor Flint is a constitutional law professor who's very, very qualified in these areas. And so check that out Thursday morning. But let me encourage you to put your hand in your pocket for $10, $20 a month to help The Good Source keep going. We need to expand our production team, expand the content that we're producing, lift the quality to be the best, because we need to replace the mainstream media. The journalists these days have become little more than corporate ad salesmen trying to get traffic to their website, and news is an optional part of their job. So let's get a news source that's reliable, balanced, and is going to bring the balance to the echo chamber, which is the ABC and the rest of the corporate media. Thank you for watching tonight. Please share it with your friends. Thank you for your comments. And thank you very much to the panel for joining us. Corin Barraclough, Lyle Shelton, Karina Ocotel, Marika Rancy, and Steve Kyler. We'll see you again next time.
See you soon.
Good night. Thanks for having us.
Bye.